Hello, everybody. I'm Warren Smith coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina.
I'm Natasha Cowden in Denver, Colorado, and we'd like to welcome you to the Ministry Watch podcast.
On today's program, a proposed State Department rule could impact employment regulations for Christian nonprofits, and some ministry leaders are voicing concerns. We'll take a look. And the North Carolina pastor who went viral for remarks that he made from the pulpit about rape has apologized, but the controversy, which has sparked ongoing protests, caught the attention of lawmakers here in North Carolina, and inflamed the state's debate over school vouchers, has taken center stage. We'll have some details. And Salem Media, one of the only Christian publicly traded companies in the country, has reported a $46 million operating loss in its last annual report. We'll have that story later in the program.
But first, two Christian colleges face legal challenges due to their names.
Yeah, Lubbock Christian University found itself in court defending the use of the LCU abbreviation against Louisiana Christian University. Now, Louisiana Christian University changed its name just 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, from Louisiana College, a name that it had had for many decades.
So what's happening between those schools?
Well, a January 2023 letter to the Louisiana school from Lubbock said that Lubbock Christian University will again request an amicable discussion between our institutions on this matter, but, it added, we are prepared to defend our right to our trademark if necessary. As of January, the case has been transferred to a new judge and assigned to a magistrate for report and recommendation. While the parties await that ruling, though, both of them are still using the LCU abbreviation on their logos.
And what about the University of Rochester and Rochester University?
Yeah, Rochester University is a Christian school. The University of Rochester is a 173-year-old research-based university. Rochester Christian is obviously a much smaller and a much newer school, but they're embroiled in a controversy in large part because of their websites. The URLs of the two universities are similar, and they differ only by one character, and it's led to a lot of misdirection from search engines. Now, shortly after a complaint was filed by the University of Rochester, it was automatically referred to mediation, and subsequently, Rochester University changed its name to Rochester Christian University, but other than that, declined any other comment on the matter.
Our next story involves new rules that could limit work of Christian humanitarian groups.
Several Christian ministries are raising concerns about a proposed addition to the Department of State's regulations that would limit the employment decisions of those that accept foreign assistance. The Accord Network, which is kind of a coalition of missions organizations, Samaritan's Purse, the Christian Legal Society, and the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, along with others, have filed an official comment about the proposed rule changes. The proposal expressly states that recipients and sub-recipients receiving department-funded foreign assistance funds must not discriminate on specified basis against end users of supplies or services, or in certain employment decisions.
Now, these ministries agree that they shouldn't discriminate against beneficiaries, but they have serious concerns about these rules governing employment decisions.
Yeah, they sure do. Many of these faith-based humanitarian ministries make employment decisions that are guided by religious beliefs to which they adhere. According to the ERLC, the rules would not allow faith-based organizations to consider, for example, sexual orientation and gender identity or expression in their hiring process in order to remain eligible for foreign aid funding. Hiring staff members that reflect the religious belief of an organization has been a long-standing pillar of religious liberty protections.
Can you give an example of how this could impact humanitarian aid?
Well, Samaritan's Purse President Franklin Graham said that the proposed State Department regulations could be used to force faith-based organizations like Samaritan's Purse to hire staff who disagree with our core biblical beliefs about God's design for marriage, sexuality, and gender in order to be eligible for government grants. Again, I'm quoting Franklin Graham there. Now, only about 6% of Samaritan Purse funding comes from government grants, and even less than that from the State Department. But Graham added, with those grants, we are able to assist tens of thousands of people around the world. We do all of this without placing any conditions or requirements on the aid. We help those who are in need, regardless of their sexual orientation, gender, race, religion, or anything else, he said.
And those groups of faith-based ministries are requesting some changes to those proposed rules. Can you fill us in on what they are?
Well, first, the group asked that the regulations state clearly that the State Department recognizes that laws such as the First Amendment, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act protect the rights of faith-based groups from the proposed employment non-discrimination rules. And secondly, rather than a waiver process, the group asks for a categorical exemption of religious organizations be adopted.
Well, let's move to our next story. What can you tell us?
Well, when an ex-social media account called Bad Preacher Clips shared a six-month-old video of Reverend Bobby Leonard of Bible Baptist Tabernacle, which is near my home here in North Carolina, seemingly excusing the rape of women who wear shorts, it created a huge controversy. The video shows him saying that if you dress like that and you get raped and I'm on the jury, he's going to go free. Like that, do you? Well, I'm right, though, because a man is a man. Well, all those comments went viral, and later the pastor realized that they were not appropriate, and he said that, in fact, they were foolish and sinful words. Nonetheless, the video sparked such an ongoing protest about this independent fundamental Baptist church in the local community that now other people are talking about it.
Yeah, and beyond the protest, this video really got state attention too.
It did. North Carolina Democratic Governor Roy Cooper seized upon the outrage to fuel his war against the state's popular Opportunity Scholarship Voucher Program because Leonard's church also runs a school, and they've received more than $3.3 million in vouchers over the last 5 years. The viral video and the controversy has become big news here in North Carolina, it also because Republican lawmakers are trying to not only fund the program again, but to expand it.
Well, Warren, let's take a quick break. When we return, the numbers are in, and the Southern Baptist Convention lost more than 1,200 congregations in 2022. I'm Natasha Cowden, along with my co-host Warren Smith. We'll have that story and much more after this short break.
Hey, everybody. Warren Smith interrupting the podcast for a very special message. You know, a couple of years ago, I met a man named John Adink, who I was really impressed with because he was very generous and very knowledgeable about foreign missions. He had a heart for missions, a heart for reaching unreached people groups, and he had the ability to give significant sums of money to missions organizations. But after doing that for several years, he had something of an epiphany and realized that a lot of the money that he was given was being wasted. And he wrote a book about that experience called How I Lost $1.5 million in Missions. You know, if you're a donor to a foreign missions organization, maybe you support a missionary, maybe you're a ministry leader of a missions organization, or perhaps a pastor, elder, or deacon that supports missionaries through your church, you really should read this book. We'll send it to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch this month. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Natasha Cowden, along with my co-host Warren Smith, and you're listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. Well, our next story, the SBC loses 1,200 congregations.
According to Lifeway Research's recently released analysis of the 2022 annual church profile of the SBC, 1,253 congregations that were part of the convention in 2021 were no longer connected to the convention in 2022. Now, keep in mind, that's a 1,200 out of about 50,000 active congregations in the SBC. But that means that 2% either disbanded or closed, about 0.5% left or were disaffiliated from the convention by the time the 2022 data was compiled.
Now, why are so many congregations leaving?
Well, about 4 in 5, 79%, as I said, disbanded or closed down. And that's, there's always normal attrition. That accounted for about 980 congregations. Within that group, over 800 of them closed, another 130 of them merged into other Southern Baptist congregations. Fewer, though, some of them became part of a non-Southern Baptist church, about 17 of those churches, and some of them were now a campus of another church. 228, or 18% of the Southern Baptist congregations that were no longer a part, were either disaffiliated or left on their own.
And this rate is higher than previous years.
Yeah, it is. The number of congregations who left or were disaffiliated doubled in 2022.
Well, next, UN2, which is Crews International Humanitarian Ministry, has initiated a fundraising campaign to feed over 1 million hungry children in 10 countries around the world this summer.
They have, and they've been promoting it pretty actively via email. And, you know, one of the things that we're starting to do here at Ministry Watch is that when we get these urgent email appeals to send money now, we're starting to do some fact-checking to find out, you know, what do they really need the money for? Where's the money going? That kind of thing. This is one of those emails that we have fact-checked. Crew, by the way, is the new name for those of us of a certain age. It's still new, of Campus Crusade for Christ. We got an email from them. And so we asked one of our reporters to reach out and see what Crew had to say, if they could talk about where the money was going. This particular email said that for contributions of less than a dollar a day, they will provide 3 meals to someone facing starvation. In other words, a gift of $99 would provide 330 meals. In addition to feeding those in need, UN2 hopes to share the message of Jesus with those who might otherwise be unreachable. Now, the current meal fundraising campaign began just last week, and Crew spokesman Karen Dye did respond to Ministry Watch inquiries, so we were encouraged by that. And they said that at the time, they had raised about $12,000 so far.
And how much are they trying to raise?
Well, the goal is about $300,000 to provide 1 million meals. All contributions given through this particular fundraising effort will go directly to the meals and not into the general fund.
What countries do they plan to serve?
They say they're wanting to serve Zambia, Liberia, and Suriname, which are countries on the west coast of Africa. But UN2 wouldn't provide a list of all 10 countries where it was going to distribute the meals. They said due to safety concerns for their in-country partners. That's where, from my point of view, Natasha, the story does break down a little bit, because while we realize there are some safety concerns in a lot of countries, we just don't understand why Crew couldn't at least name the countries where they were helping without naming the in-country partners. But Crew was forthcoming. They did give us a fair amount of information that we asked for. They didn't run and hide, which a lot of ministries do whenever we start calling, asking for that same information. So in general, we give Crew high marks for accountability on this particular project. By the way, overall, Crew gets pretty high marks from us generally. They get a 3-star financial efficiency rating, which is not great, but it's pretty good. And they have a donor confidence score of 73. Again, not one of our top scores, but it does mean that you can give with confidence to Crew.
Well, our next story also involves international aid, this time in Haiti.
Child Evangelism Fellowship has been working in Haiti for 40 years. It has 19 staff and hundreds of trained volunteers there. At least they did before the current crisis in Haiti. And even amidst the unrest, CEF staff and volunteers were still able to plan about 45 Easter parties that 1,500 people attended. They say that 58 kids, children made professions of faith in Christ as a result of these parties. So that's good news. Child Evangelism Fellowship's goal is to evangelize boys and girls with the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ and to establish them in the Word of God and in a local church for Christian living.
So what's happening now?
Well, this week, Child Evangelism Fellowship Haiti will provide training to parents and ministry to children of the estimated 100,000 Haitians that are in displacement camps to try to help them cope with this crisis. The people of Haiti are dealing with the unrest, fear, and violence and need help and help understanding how God can provide hope in the midst of this setting. That, according to CEF Vice President of Global Partnerships, John Luck.
Now, how does CEF practically fulfill its mission?
Well, it holds a long-term view with three essential steps: training nationals, in other words, not just sending Americans over there, equipping them with ministry tools, and then providing resources. Luck said that CEF has been training Haitian nationals to minister to children for 40 years. Nationals, he said, are best positioned to carry out ministry because they already know the language and the culture and will not flee the country when times get hard because it's their home. And as I mentioned a moment ago, that's an approach that Ministry Watch endorses.
Well, how can Christians here get involved?
Well, Luck said that Christians can pray for peace in Haiti, of course, pray for stable leadership and the influence of gangs to be diminished. They can also pray for CEF, that they have the resources to do the work they need to do, and that those resources are not vandalized, because there's, like I say, a lot of gang violence there. Some things are just being stolen or just destroyed in Haiti right now. Pray for the safety of CEF workers who are putting themselves in harm's way to minister to kids. By the way, again, Child Evangelism Fellowship has a donor confidence score of 75 out of 100 from Ministry Watch, which means that you can give with confidence.
Let's look at one more story before our next break.
Well, it's a story of the Moundville Methodist Church in Moundville, Alabama, and the church's daycare ministry director, who was arrested on Monday on charges of failure to report child abuse and obstruction of a governmental investigation. Local media there reported that on Tuesday that Michael Cobb, who is the pastor, he's 42 years of age, and Brianna Hope, 34, neglected to report allegations of child abuse for approximately a month. Ada Jimerson, who is 59 years of age, was arrested on charges of child abuse and taken to the Hale County Jail, and at least one more daycare worker is also under investigation.
Can you explain how the pastor was involved?
Well, according to Police Chief Toby Banks, the Moundville Police Department received credible information from a reliable source on April 2nd about possible child abuse at the church's daycare ministry. Banks, again, he's the police chief there, told an ABC affiliate that he spoke to Brianna Lee the very next day, who said that the church was preparing to fire one of the women allegedly involved in the abuse incident, and in doing so, revealed that the church was already aware of the abuse incident but had not reported it to the police. And that's actually where they got into trouble, because Alabama and many, many other states is a must report state. In other words, a mandatory reporting state where suspicion or knowledge of child abuse must be reported to law enforcement for investigation.
Now, what about the woman who was actually accused?
Well, on Tuesday, Ada Jimerson was arrested on one Class C felony of child abuse, accused of hitting children with kitchen spoons and biting children as punishment. If convicted, Jimerson could face from 1 to 10 years in prison and a fine of up to $15,000. Moundville United Methodist Church has not publicly commented about the arrest so far. The church has indefinitely shut down, though, its daycare center.
Warren, we're going to take another break here. When we return, our lightning round of ministry news of the week. I'm Natasha Cowden with my co-host Warren Smith. More in a moment.
Hey, everybody. Warren Smith interrupting the podcast one more time just to remind you that this month, the month of April, we are giving away a book called How I Lost $1.5 million in Missions by John Adink. It's a book that I think everyone who has a heart for missions work should read. I think it'll help you become a more effective steward of the resources that God has entrusted to you, especially if you want to divert some of those resources to missions organizations. We'll send this book to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch during the month of April. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Natasha Cowden with my co-host Warren Smith, and you're listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. Now, we like to use this last segment as a sort of lightning round of shorter news briefs. What do you have first?
Broadcasting giant Salem Media Group is one of the only Christian publicly traded companies, and it closed 2023 with about $258 million in revenue, which is a lot of money, but it was actually down $8 million from the year before, primarily because of falling ad sales. In its latest annual report just released, the Texas-based company reported a $46 million operating loss for the year. Expenses exceeded $300 million. It totaled $455 million in assets. But again, that was about a $50 million drop from the year before.
What's next?
As expected, there was a rate case filing by the United States Postal Service this week that could include increases of nearly 10% to our postal rates. Now, this change will affect all of us who ever mail a letter, but it could hit Christian nonprofits especially hard. They send bulk mail, and they will be charged what's called a density premium for direct mail where there's not a high number going to a particular area. And there are a lot of direct mail organizations and Christian ministries that are going to protest that particular part of the new rate increase. But if it's approved in its current form, big increase, and it'll go into effect in July.
Who's in our ministry spotlight this week?
Alpha USA is in our ministry spotlight. They're headquartered in Illinois. Recently saw its Ministry Watch financial efficiency rating fall from 4 stars to 3 stars, primarily because of a sharp rise in fundraising costs. The fundraising cost for the organization is about 11% of its annual revenue, and most organizations in its category have about 6% of their revenue going to fundraising. Alpha, though, other than that, is doing really great work. Alpha USA helps churches and other organizations with an 11-week series. It's a kind of a class in Christian apologetics, the basics of the Christian faith. And it has proven to be an incredibly effective evangelism tool in many countries. And I should also add that in spite of that drop in financial efficiency, Ministry Watch continues to give a donor confidence score to Alpha of 87, which is a give with confidence score, and it has a transparency grade of A, which is our top score.
And who did Christina highlight in Ministries Making a Difference?
Hastings Church of the Nazarene in Barry County, Michigan, has become the county's sole provider of English language learning services. It's a rural church, and they partnered with West Michigan Works to start classes and find students, many of whom work on local farms. So a remarkable story from a small church in Michigan. Also want to mention Operation Blessing. They have deployed an international disaster relief team to Taiwan from its Philippines location to assess the needs of victims there after it was hit by a 7.4 magnitude earthquake. 12 people were killed. And I want to mention a ministry that's kind of interesting and unusual. Builders International is the ministry, and they repair churches around the world. They are working on churches in the Bahamas that have been damaged by hurricanes. Builders International is an Assemblies of God ministry, and they partner with missionaries around the world on construction projects. They bring, you know, hard construction management skills to projects like churches, schools, orphanages, and safe houses. They've, over the years, mobilized 200 teams that have worked in 39 countries. And by the way, Natasha, when I said over the years, that's just in the last 3 years alone. So pretty remarkable. And finally, I want to mention that back in November, we reported that an organization called Mission Cry was shipping a container full of musical instruments to Liberia, along with Bibles and other supplies for a nearby seminary. And at that time, Mission Cry was still waiting for the stocked container ships to be sponsored by people here in the United States and then ultimately shipped. But we wanted to do a follow-up on that story. It's happened. Now, the containers have been safely delivered to Liberia, and the music students there even produced a video of them playing their instruments to send back to the U.S. to say thank you.
And Warren, do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Well, I wanted to mention that I was in Indianapolis this week meeting with donors and others there. And if you came out to some of my meetings, thanks so much for hanging out with me. And a special thanks to Bill Warren with FAME, which is a medical missions organization based in Indianapolis, for showing me some Hoosier hospitality. I enjoyed our time together very much. I would also like to remind everyone this month that we're offering a new book for everyone who donates to Ministry Watch. It's called How I Lost $1.5 Million in Missions. It's by a man named John Adink. If you're a donor to foreign missions projects, a ministry leader of a missions organization, or perhaps a pastor who supports missionaries, you really should read this book. I was very taken by it, which is one of the reasons we wanted to use it this month. We'll send it to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
The producer for today's program is Jeff McIntosh. We get database and other technical support from Stephen DeBerry, Rod Pitzer, and Casey Suddeth. Writers who contributed to today's program include Sherilyn Bacon, Kim Roberts, Tony Matter, Aaron Earls, Christopher Mann, Shannon Cuthrill, Richard Levy, Brittany Smith, and Christina Darnell. A special thanks to the Christian Chronicle, Lifeway Research, and the Nonprofit Times for contributing materials for this week's podcast. And you've been listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. Until next time, may God bless you.